Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. Today is my first Sunday back after being away for 3 months on maternity leave. I'm so grateful to you to have had that time to be away, and I'm so happy to be back this morning. I want to extend my appreciation and gratitude, especially to all of the leaders who made sure that the church continued to be a wonderful, vibrant, thriving place while I was gone, and special thanks to all of the staff and to Reverend Renee and Reverend Christy, who picked up so many pieces of responsibilities to enable me to really be focused on my family and the new baby. So I'm so grateful to you all. I'm joined in welcoming this morning by Karen Lapidus, who is serving as our Director of Religious Education, our Music Director, Hal Walker, the Fallowtime Folk Orchestra, and Lori McGee, who's serving as our Worship Associate today. We light our chalice from words from Kalidasa, a 5th century Indian poet. Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day.
Do you make New Year's resolutions? I never do. At the turning of the year, I much prefer to take stock. What's good in my life? What needs to be fixed? Where can I improve, especially when it comes to relationships with those I love? What are my goals for the year? I've seen many posts on Facebook indicating that most people hope this year will be better than the last. I wonder how many of those people said that last year, too. Of course we all want life to be better, but we are setting ourselves up for failure if we think that nothing bad will happen in a whole year's time. Perhaps what we should wish for instead is the ability to better handle what life puts in our path. Maybe this is the better that we need. Be better at facing change, especially when it's unwanted and uncontrollable. Be better at showing love in the face of challenging people or situations. Be better at giving our time to those who need it most. These are the kinds of better that I need to be. May you all be blessed with the kinds of better you need for this coming year. Come, let us worship together.
When I was speaking with Karen about our time for all ages this morning, she reminded me that there would be several new families here today who I haven't had a chance to meet yet, because there are always new families joining congregations. And so I thought it might be helpful today to talk to some of the new families, and especially the new children and youth here, about what a minister is, because it's possible that some of you may not have ever had a minister before. So I have a lot of ideas to share, but before I do, I wanted to see if any of you children or youth have ideas that you might want to share about what a minister is and what a minister does. Does anyone have any ideas? It's a job that can be a little mysterious, because most children only see their minister one day a week. So let me tell you what I think my job is. The job of a minister, as I understand it, is to help people grow their souls. Now, that's a spiritual way of talking, and it means a lot of different things. To me, it means helping you find the parts of yourself deep inside of you that are kind and generous and helpful and loving, and help you grow those parts of yourself. So that's one part of growing a soul. But there are other parts too, and that has to do with your connections. Your connections are not only to yourself and those parts of you that you want to grow, but also to other people. So you're connected, of course, to your family and to your friends, but you're also connected to a lot of other people, like all the people in this congregation and all of the people in your school and in your neighborhood. and all the people all around the world, including people that you have never met and will never meet. Your connections are so vast. That means they spread out so far. And it's not just to people who are alive now, which is one thing, right? There's a lot of people that we're connected to who are alive now, but we're also connected to people who were alive a long time ago, people whose names we don't even know, people who dreamed us into being, who loved us into being, people who paved the way for us to be here today. And there's more. We're also connected to people who are going to live a long time after us, people who one day we will dream into being and love into being. So that's a lot of connections, and those are big ideas, but it's even bigger than that, because each of us is also connected to the planet, to the trees, to the stars, to the birds, to the sun. Our connections go out and out and out, farther than we can even imagine sometimes. And part of growing our souls is learning about those connections, learning about all the ways that we're connected, and recognizing what a blessing those connections are. And recognizing also that because of all those blessings, we have responsibilities. And trying to figure out what it is we are responsible for in this life. It's the work of a lifetime, and we need a lot of people to help us. A minister's job is to focus specifically on that, specifically on the work of growing souls. But there are lots of other people who do that work too, like all of your parents and your guardians. That's their first job, is to help you grow your souls. And your director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, and all of your teachers, that's their job too. And all the people in this congregation, it's all of our jobs. We do it together for one another. All of us are teachers and learners together. So to help you remember, and to help you remember that you're connected to me as your minister every day, not just on Sundays, I have a little something for you this morning. I have for you my business card. And on this, you will find my phone number here at the church. I work every day except for Mondays. And you will also find my email address if you're old enough to have an email account. And on the back, I wrote my cell phone number. And if you are old enough to have a cell phone, you might stick my number in there so you always have it. And if you're old enough to have a Facebook account, you can find me there too. Part of the reason I want you to know how to get in touch with me is because sometimes people want to talk to their ministers on days other than Sundays. You might want to talk to me about ideas that you have about God or questions that you have about religion or spirituality. And if you're young, you can let your parents know and they can call me and set up a time for us to talk. And if you're older, you can reach out to me directly. Text or send a Facebook message or a call, whatever you want to do, and we can find a time to talk. And especially for those of you who are older, another reason I want you to know how to get in touch with me is because sometimes we all get into trouble. And when that happens, we need people to help us. And I want you to know that your minister is one of the people who's available to help you. So it doesn't matter what time it is, it doesn't matter what the situation is, if you can't get a hold of your parents or you don't want to get a hold of your parents and you need another adult in your life who can help you when you're in trouble, your minister is another person you can reach out to. So Karen has my business cards, and she's going to bring them around to all the classes so you can take one home with you today to help you remember all the ways you're connected and to help you remember that I, as your minister, and this church as your community, is always available to help you. Words to lead us into a time of meditation and prayer from T.S. Eliot, his poem Little Gidding, which is the fourth of the four quartets. The poem deals with many themes. One of them is the question of time and the human relationship to time. These words lift up the paradox of beginnings and endings, which are fitting words for the beginning of a new year. What we call the beginning is often an end, and to make an end is to make a beginning. The end is where we start from. With the drawing of this love and the voice of this calling, we shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. We'll keep silence for a few moments together. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder. We gather this morning in the dark and cold of winter to remember that there is always warmth and light. We give thanks for all the many blessings of warmth and light in our lives, for the places we have to live, for the heat to keep them warm, for the people we share our days with. We give thanks for the many blessings of warmth and light which we have been given. And we remember this morning that we can also be those blessings. We can be blessings of warmth and light for one another. Help us remember. Help us remember we can do this literally for the people and the animals who are indeed struggling in the cold that is and the cold that will come. We can offer blessings of warmth and light for the people we share our days with a kind word, a gentle touch, a sincere smile. We can be blessings of warmth and light. And for this world, today and every day, there is a light in us. By tending it and keeping it strong, we have blessings to share with this world. Blessings of warmth and light. May we remember and share them generously. Amen, and blessed be.
ever noticed that there is no running away from anything? That sooner or later, the things that you don't want to deal with and try to escape from, or paper over and pretend aren't there, catch up with you, especially if they have to do with old patterns and fears. The romantic notion is that if it's no good over here, you only have to go over there and things will be different. If this job's no good, change jobs. If this wife's no good, change wives. If this town's no good, change towns. The underlying thinking is that the reason for your troubles is outside of you, in the location, in others, in circumstances. Change the location, change the circumstances, and everything will fall into place. You can start over, have a new beginning. The trouble with this way of seeing is that it conveniently ignores the fact that you carry your head and your heart and what some would call your karma around with you. You cannot escape yourself, try as you might. And what reason, other than pure wishful thinking, would you have to suspect that things would be different or better somewhere else anyway? Sooner or later, the same problems would arise if, in fact, they stem in large part from your patterns of seeing, thinking, and behaving. Too often, our lives cease working because we cease working at life, because we are unwilling to take responsibility for things as they are and to work with our difficulties. We don't understand that it is actually possible to attain clarity, understanding, and transformation right in the middle of what is here and now, however problematic it may be. This way of seeing and thinking is an all too prevalent trap. There is no successful escaping from yourself in the long run, only transformation. There can be no resolution leading to growth until the present situation has been faced completely and you have opened to it with mindfulness, allowing the roughness of the situation to sand down your own rough edges. This is the path of working where you find yourself, with what is found here and now. This, then, really is it. This place, this relationship, this dilemma, this job. The challenge of mindfulness is to work with the very circumstances that you find yourself in, no matter how unpleasant, how discouraging, how limited, how unending and stuck they may appear to be. And to make sure you have done everything in your power to use their energies to transform yourself before you decide to cut your losses and move on. It's right here that the real work needs to happen.
Over the last few months, I've spent a lot of time feeding the baby. And there's not a lot to do when you're feeding the baby besides look at the baby. And so I've listened to the news an awful lot. Sometimes too much of it. But some things were really interesting, including recently in one of the obligatory news stories about the new year, I learned that between 40 and 50% of the people in the United States make a resolution for the new year. I also learned that just under half of the people who make resolutions are still keeping them by the time June rolls around. It may be stating the obvious, but it seems that two of the biggest reasons that so many people fail to keep their resolutions is because they have chosen resolutions that are way too large, big, sweeping life changes, and have not lined up adequate support to make such big changes. The changes that top the list are predictable enough: lose weight, exercise more, be better about finances, including saving more money, and quit smoking. Maybe one of you made just such a resolution. The good news, if you're resolved to do one of these things, is that there's tons of practical advice available about how you can make those goals small enough to be realistic and line up support to help you in your endeavor. Especially now, at the beginning of a year, there are lots of ways to connect with that support, either in person or virtually online. I myself am not generally a maker of New Year resolutions. I think it's primarily because January doesn't actually feel to me like the New Year. For a long time, September felt like the New Year when I was in an academic schedule. And in recent years, spring has started to feel like the New Year when everything is fresh and new. And yet, like Lori, the other thing you can do while you're feeding the baby, one hand is scroll Facebook. So I've also spent a lot of time looking at Facebook. And as the new year rolled around, I saw all these people's posts about what 2013 meant and what 2014 might bring. And the cultural forces are strong, so I found myself in a time of reflection. Of course, for us, for me, my family, 2013 will always be the year that our sweet baby was born, and in that it was a year of wondrous blessing. When we planned the theme for this service back in September, I was thinking about returning to you with a new baby and thinking that I'd have something to say about the courage of new beginnings, inspired by my own joyful new beginning. But it turns out that that's not what's rising to the surface for me today. Maybe that's because the baby has been such a long time coming and the joy of it all drowns out the challenge. So I'm not focused there. I do know that sometimes that's the way it is, that even happy life developments like new babies, new jobs, new relationships can be really stressful, sources of significant stress. And I also know that sometimes finding ways to deal with that stress can be really challenging. I'm thinking about all of the weddings that I've officiated and the stress that people often feel in the process of preparing, but even on the wedding day itself. One particular wedding that I officiated for some friends of mine was exemplified this really well right before. You know, it was an outdoor wedding. Everybody's outside. It's a lovely view. I go back to get the bride and groom, and like at that moment, the groom has a panic attack. Seriously, like a full-blown panic attack, and is not sure that he can do it. They had been together for several years. It wasn't about the relationship. It was about revealing himself to all of those people, revealing himself to his family and friends, to stand there and to say, I declare myself to you, and to say such intimate things before all those people, and to let himself be seen in that way. He wasn't sure he could do it. And so he asked, like, could we just do it back here and then go have the party? You know? But his now wife really wanted the wedding to go forth. So I gave them a little time. They talked together. He did some deep breathing exercises. Ultimately, he took a shot of vodka, calmed himself down, and the wedding proceeded. They're still married happily, and they have a baby and another on the way. So as I think about the new beginnings we choose for ourselves and the courage it takes to live into new beginnings, I know that that is something that all of us could use a little help with, but it's very related to, and I think that the bigger challenge is living into the new beginnings that are not joyful, the new beginnings that we do not choose and wish were not a part of our life. And that's where my attention is drawn this morning. So when those new beginnings come, new beginnings that we didn't plan and would not choose, when they come, the pain of broken dreams can often seriously challenge our capacity to find the courage we need to face our heartache. I'm sure you know someone who's gotten stuck in their pain when they couldn't find the courage to live into their loss. Maybe you've been such a person. I know I have been such a person. So what makes the difference? What spiritual resources can help us cultivate the courage we need to live into the new chapters in our life, whether they be joyous or whether they be sorrowful? For about a year now, I've been facilitating a monthly chalice group out in Hudson at the Laurel Lake Retirement Community. Last summer, courage was the theme for one of our sessions. And I asked the participants in the group where they saw courage manifested in everyday life. They all agreed that they see great courage all around them every single day. Because at Laurel Lake, as in any retirement community or nursing home, there are people who have endured significant and profound losses. There are people who have lost some of the capacities that allowed them to live well independently. There are people who have lost spouses. There are people who have lost health. There are people who have relocated to be near adult children, leaving behind the people, the communities, the homes that they lived in for many years. We all know that if we live long enough, some of those losses will be ours too. And so as I asked the group the question I just posed to you, I wanted to know from myself, where does a person find the spiritual courage to live into the new chapters of our lives that we did not choose and do not want? The response that I heard that makes the most sense to me has to do with vulnerability. The people who find the courage to begin again when one chapter of their lives has ended and another has begun are the people who are willing to let themselves be seen by others, the people who are willing to reach out and make new connections. In short, the people who are willing to be vulnerable. Now, maybe that sounds paradoxical. When we think about vulnerability, we often think about not strength, but weakness in this culture. And yet, the social work professor Brené Brown has concluded from her research that vulnerability is courage. She says that vulnerability is the core, the heart, the center of meaningful human experience. A lot of people have negative associations with the word, thinking about vulnerability as something like naivete or gullibility. But she's careful to explain that that's not what vulnerability is about. Rather, vulnerability is about being real and being present. It's manifest whenever we really show up to our lives and allow other people to see us who we are, without the mask, without the defenses. She says that from her research and over 11,000 individual pieces of data, she has been unable to find a single example of moral leadership or spiritual courage that was not born out of vulnerability, of a person's willingness to be real and present in their own lives. Now that just rings true to me. And if it does to you too, you may be wondering, so how do we do that? How do we cultivate that? How do we cultivate that capacity? Jon Kabat-Zinn says that we cultivate it by facing the truth that wherever we go, there we are. He says that try as we might, there is no way to successfully escape from the circumstances of our lives. The lost job, the troubled relationship, the failed marriage, the new diagnosis, the big disappointment that threatens to swallow us whole. None of these can truly be escaped. Kabat-Zinn is a Buddhist, and he has for many years been a student and now a teacher of mindfulness meditation. His book that Lori read from earlier is about how to use mindfulness meditation to be real and to be present in our own lives. Mindfulness meditation is one of the tools that can help us cultivate courageous vulnerability. And there are many others. Yoga, devotional reading, sacred singing, prayer. There are lots of pathways to spiritual practice, and they can take many forms. What they have in common is the way that they strengthen a life, the way that they nurture a spirit, the way that they grow a soul, which are all ways of saying that spiritual practice help us live into our lives authentically and fully, no matter what our lives bring. Earlier in the service, we heard from T.S. Eliot. In the third of his quartets, there's a passage in which he speaks of the kind of presence and attention I'm trying to describe. He writes, "To apprehend the point of intersection of the timeless with time is an occupation of the saint. For most of us, there is only the unattended moment, the moment in and out of time, the distraction fit lost in a shaft of sunlight, the wild time unseen, or the winter lightning, or the waterfall, or the music heard so deeply that it's not heard at all. But you are the music while the music lasts. These are only hints and guesses, hints followed by guesses, and the rest is prayer, observation, discipline, thought, and action." In these lines, I hear a call to attend as best we can, as fully as we can, to be as present as we can, in an authentic way, to the real moments of our lives. And this ultimately is what spiritual practice is all about. It's about showing up to the lives that we have been given, the joyful, the sorrowful, and everything in between. In her book, The Writing Life, Annie Dillard says, "How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives." I'm sure that there are some people who sometimes reach a new moment in their lives and find the strength to make a radical change, to do something completely new. But most of us, most of the time, meet the challenges, the joyful ones and the sorrowful ones, by drawing on the tools and the resources we have already begun to develop in our living. The calendar tells us that this is a new year, but the truth is, every moment is brand new. Every moment is another brand new chance to practice growing our souls and being the kind of people we want to be. And so, my wish for you in this new year is that you practice well. Amen, and blessed be. I send you with these words from Wayne Arneson. Take courage, friends. The path is often hard, the way is never clear, and the stakes are very high. But take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. Go in peace.